there and welcome to the Drex Files Radio Hour without Joe Yardley again. I'm sorry about that. Today we're going to play a piece of tape, as they say, from an event here in Munich, the Netzkongress, by the Bavarian radio station Bayern 2 and the show Zündfunk. And Chaos Princess from High Fidelity and I, we were moderating a panel with Second Life founder, High Fidelity founder Philip Rosedale, live in High Fidelity talking about social VR and the freedom of expression in social VR, the authenticity of communication in social VR. That event took place yesterday as we go to air in front of an audience of about 100 people in the physical world and a handful of avatars in High Fidelity. I'm driving home from the event right now. Don't worry about it. I have both my hands at the steering wheel as I record this intro. It was a really interesting panel discussion. The people in the physical room were very interested by the concept. Philip made some very good points. We had some severe technical issues, which were all due to bandwidth, which shows you, or us, that this wonderful technology of virtual worlds, I think, is still hampered by the... Oops, there's a guy coming out of the parking lot. By the internet infrastructure, the bottleneck issue, I guess. I'm not sure if that's an accurate term. Oops, there's an ambulance coming. Jesus Christ, this is worse than the South Central LA here. Like, people are getting shot and stuff. No, it's not that funny of a joke. I want to play on the podcast today the condensed version of our conversation with Philip, because it was fascinating. A lot of stuff you may have heard him say before, but maybe in a different context. We also asked him about the difference between, conceptually, what Sansar is trying to do and what High Fidelity is trying to do. And we had, which I found was really cool, I put my Oculus at the very end of the presentation. So Chaos Princess and I, she had a Vive system, I had an Oculus Rift system, and we asked the audience if somebody would like to come on stage and put my Oculus on and ask Philip a question, and he took out some balloons and threw the balloons up, and it was interesting. This was an audience at this, what they called Netzkongress. This was an audience that I think was largely uninitiated to the concept of virtual world. So it was interesting for them to see those possibilities and also kind of struggle with their own perception of avatar-based communication. So let's roll the tape.
Hey, everybody.
Philip, thanks for coming. Can we get a big applause in the physical world? Könnt ihr mal klatschen?
I love it. The clap script is working. Thank you.
Munich represent.
Thank you.
Virtual reality. This is a social VR world.
Yep.
What is the difference? What is social VR vis-a-vis virtual reality that is the buzzword du jour?
Well, I mean, at a high level, I would define social VR as just the experience of having a lot of people or just two people together in a VR space. I mean, you know, putting on the headset is one thing when you're playing a video game, but obviously, like we're doing right now and we're doing with all our friends here, the experience of being in the space together is a very unique one, and that's what people have come to call social VR. I think it's a little bit limiting because it sounds like social media for VR, and I think it makes us feel like we're supposed to be sending out tweets or something, you know. Hello, Chaos.
Xal is just, she photobombed you. Photobombed.
She did. So there we go. And she's loading, so she'll land on the stage here, another magical aspect of our system.
She's levitating.
You're a ghost until the world is there. Yeah.
Philip, let me ask you, virtual reality, just with Second Life, and I just visited you 2 weeks ago in San Francisco, and we talked about the sense of place where virtual worlds are so fundamentally different from other social networks. What's the significance of the place? Because some people argue, well, why do I need a virtual world? You know, I can connect with people on Facebook, I can connect with people on Twitter. What is the added awesomeness? I'm biased, of course.
Well, there's obviously a lot of, I mean, there's so much to say about that, right? One is simply that we, in the real world, in any world, act to build the world around us, to make it make sense. You know, we use the world as a tool to communicate. So we build houses and clothing and, you know, stadiums and freeways and all these things as a means of connecting ourselves to each other. And so I think the virtual world is exactly the same thing. But practically speaking, we need virtual worlds where we can change things, because, say, if I want to teach everybody physics, well, I need a whiteboard and, you know, I need to change this stage and get rid of these trees and, you know, do whatever I need to do my work. So the identity, the avatar, what you look like, and the room, what's in this room, you know, where the chairs are, all of that is part of creating an experience that can have utility for people in VR.
Your avatar looks fairly photorealistic. We know that you had yourself scanned, so that possibility exists. Right. Once Xaos is in, she did the same thing, and she was going to switch her avatar. Her choice with this avatar, with her main avatar, is... But let me ask you, Xaos, can you hear us?
Yes.
Xaos, why did you choose this... fairly cartoonish looking avatar? We look at Philip here. Philip looks really very similar to how he does in the physical world. Why did you choose this avatar when you first came into High Fidelity? What's the significance of your avatar?
Well, at first it was just a practical issue. I read about High Fidelity in the Wired magazine, and I decided to do my own Fuse avatar, and which is a software where you can create your own avatars. And there I found this comic looking template, and I thought it's like a nice thing to portray my real self or my inner character. And so I decided on this comic-wise avatar because it gives me more freedom of self-expression. It's like our...
And Philip, I'm going to ask you, because your experience with Second Life and Second Life, it's so incredibly rich. The avatar is already in High Fidelity, and we didn't mention Sansar, which is Linden Lab's new virtual world, where I'm
right.
A little bit biased because I work with them on their promotional videos. It's also the goal of all of your company and of Linden Lab is to present that freedom of expression. If we look into the audience right here, Dr. Fran, can you wave to us? Here's Dr. Fran, and who else do we have? We have a person with bunny ears and butterfly wings. Who's that?
That's Caitlin. Hi.
Caitlin. Oh my God. Hi, Caitlin. Kannst du was auf Deutsch sagen?
And I crashed.
Yeah. Hello. Grüß dich und grüß euch.
So Caitlin is a developer over at High Fidelity, and she speaks very German very well. So here she looks, you look very different than you do in the physical world. Philip, you chose to, here's a little teddy bear. Philip, you chose to be photorealistic, which wasn't possible before scanning and photographing.
Right.
What made you choose this avatar, and do you believe that it's maybe a little bit reductive now, or that the tendency will be this photorealism
right.
to the detriment of that rich expression that we see in Second Life?
I don't think so. I mean, I think people... I think, I mean, by the way, this avatar is actually a little bit of a combination of a photorealistic capture and then a bit of editing done on top of it. So I am a little bit different than the full scans that we've done of me, and we also have ones. I don't see anybody... Well, perhaps, I think... That might be Michelle there in the background. And in fact, Piper is wearing an avatar there in the audience that was derived from a very, very high-resolution scan we did of an actor in Los Angeles. And so Jasmine looks a lot like herself, although Jasmine didn't scan that avatar. She modeled it, I think. Right, Jasmine?
That's right.
So, Drax, I would say that consider the case of wanting to have a public figure give a talk in the virtual world, which often I'm doing, and I want to be recognized as Philip Rosedale, who I am. That's an example of a case where my choice of avatar might logically be the photo-scanned version of me, but I think that if I was you know, going to a party or something. I'm not sure. I think it's very possible in VR that I'd choose a representation of myself that was different. So I think that we have to make VR work for everyone, we have to provide this wide range of capability. And I don't think that the simple fact that some people are going to show up having been scanned in, you know, scanner booths means that everybody's going to have to do that. I doubt that.
So you're not pushing this down in a dictatorial fashion that now you require everybody to be scanned in order to have fun in the virtual world?
Yeah, we're certainly not. And in fact, it's the minority of avatars yet that can be done that way, because you have to go into one of these very cool, but not huge yet, scanning stations to do it. And scanning your whole body is still something that's relatively expensive. So we're not all going to do it quite yet. You know, it's a few hundred dollars typically, and it's quite a process.
What is happening right now, we're basically having this conversation with people from all over the world. You're in San Francisco, we're here in Munich, I don't know where all these other people, I know that Dr. Fan is in New York. So all this stuff,
London,
is being streamed down to here.
Finland.
So the bandwidth, sorry, Xais, you were saying?
London, she was calling out
London and Finland.
Finland. LA.
Finland.
LA.
Where is Menethol?
That's Menethol. Yeah.
Menethol's up there in the back.
I don't see him. Come closer to the stage. Menethol, come here. You rescued us earlier in the soundcheck. This is Menethol. A round of applause for Menethol in world and in the physical room. Menethol has rescued us earlier in the tech check because we had issues with the tablet. It's now not functioning, but that has different reasons. Thank you, Menethol. And I just wanted to say, people here in Munich cannot see my avatar. My avatar also looks different from my physical self. He has 20 pounds less, so he has a really good, so you can see here, he has flip-flops. But for me, this avatar is myself, and the point that Philip just made is obviously a good one. It's his choice as the representative of this company that he can choose this avatar. For me, as sort of a media personality, I choose to be coherent within my physical appearance in the virtual world, in all worlds.
Oh, I said you look about like you do here, right?
Yeah.
So has my dupe avatar loaded yet?
So Xaos is loading her dupe avatar, so that might take a little bit. Philip, let me ask you what the people in the room also may not know. There's a virtual economy. Second Life is actually still, after 14 years, very successful in helping people become entrepreneurs. And I think that also ties in with the freedom to communicate through products and services. In High Fidelity, you have a plan to secure intellectual property, because that's been an issue not only in virtual worlds, but also in the internet as a whole. Everything that you see here is user made.
In the real world, things are physical, and so making copies of things is quite difficult in many cases, right? But some things, like movies or sound, you know, are already examples of things that are so easy to make copies of. You need to, in many cases, have some public debate over whether you should just copy everything, right? Digital information can always be copied. So music and videos, for example, can just be copied. But we still, as consumers, respect the idea that some people need to make all that material for us, performers, musicians, artists. And so we're willing, in many cases, to pay for something that we could as easily make a copy of. In the virtual world, everything is copyable. My avatar, that skateboard, of course, media,
my
whole rooms like this. All these things can easily be copied. And so we need to have the virtual world work, some kind of shared agreement and functionality around intellectual property, because otherwise nobody would build anything. We'd have, a virtual world full of nothing, because nobody would want to engage, for example, in the process of building headphones like the ones you're wearing to sell to other people. So we need IP rules, and that's something that, having watched the success of Second Life, we think about a ton here. And, you know, it's kind of the part of the High Fidelity project that we're in the middle of right now, is getting all that set up.
This comes up all the time. And when I was with you in San Francisco, we're working on a film about how people with disabilities use virtual worlds and how they communicate. Right. And the thesis is also here that the communication can be more authentic. And as you know, in the press or the public perception, sometimes people would say, well, how is that possible? Because people don't know who anybody is. People have weird avatars. They look weird. They act weird. I don't know who that is. How can that be more authentic than in the physical world? Could you make that pitch, why that is? Why in virtual worlds we could possibly, if we choose to communicate more authentically than in the physical world?
Sure. I mean, the big thing we've seen that we saw with Second Life, and that's true as well with High Fidelity, is that it's easier to choose your appearance and to make small changes to it, both to yourself and to the room around you, you know, than it is in the real world. And if you think about it, what that means in a kind of an economic sense is that everyone is going to invest in more changes to themselves than what we do in the real world. And so the subtle thing about that is that it tends to make us more detailed, kind of, whether we like it or not, sometimes, in our description of ourselves. And I think that's a concept that is not obvious yet to people, and one that I hope is, you know, written about and explained more in the years to come. But it just tends to be the case. If you look at our audience of many, many friends who I know here, you'll see that they look more different from each other and more detailed in their depiction of themselves than they would if they were sitting here in their physical bodies. And the reason is simply that they can make these subtle changes to their appearance and identity. And another thing, of course, you guys all know, is that we tend in virtual worlds to create a rich identity, but not to change it quite so much as people might think, because that identity becomes very much a part of our internal self when we're in the world. And so, you know, as you know, as one who, you know, frequents these worlds, that feeling is a very intense feeling. Your avatar in the virtual world is very much you. But in many cases, as you said, a more detailed description of you.
We have to imagine these wonderful avatars that we saw earlier, because we're still struggling a little bit with bandwidth here at the theater. And that was a risk that we were worth taking. Say that again, Carl?
Speaking of that risk, you know, we're watching you drop out there. So it sounds like you guys have terrible bandwidth from the actual show. We're all okay, right?
Yeah, it's pretty smooth here.
It's funny. This is the high speed audience back here, and then we got Drax and Chaos trying to make it work.
All good here.
Your sound and visual is good here.
Perfect. Yeah. I'm in obviously San Francisco, so Zaru is in San Jose or something like that.
How far are those two?
Oh, they're about. Let's see. What is it about? 40 miles apart, 30 miles apart.
That sounds right.
Although it's quite a long drive on some days. It's a bit like driving from, you know, New York to Long Island or something. I mean, it can be a slow drive. It can be a very slow drive some days. Hey, Drax.
Oh,
Philip, we're back. We just crashed.
Oh, you did?
So, Philip, my next question would be, you have chosen with High Fidelity to create a open source platform where your stated goal is that people simulate the worlds on their own machines and possibly rent the computing power out to other people who may not have the computing power. In the case of this stage right now, this is simulated by you guys, or it's from an Amazon server, as well as my Dragster world in High Fidelity. Now, Sansar, which we haven't mentioned, which I mentioned once earlier, which is Linden Labs' next generation virtual world, they have chosen to go the route, a different route, where they host the service. And they basically, what they are selling for a subscription fee is, we take care of all this server installing. You don't have to worry. You log in, you build your world, and we connect it to the Atlas, and you're connected. So could you tell us why you decided to go the route of open source, and what is the end game? Is it to become, like in Ready Player One, who are the bad guys? The ISI? Anybody well, the read first Ready Player One in the room?
I bet we all have. I've read it. I'm on my. I've read it twice. There was a statement made a few days ago by Mark Zuckerberg at the Oculus conference, which many of you guys, of course, followed, and some of us I think were actually there. Jasmine was there. The statement Mark Zuckerberg made was, I want to get, and he said, and it's a statement I've made a number of times over the years, I want to get 1 billion people in VR. Now, there's 1 million people in VR today. That's Second Life, and that's the biggest world. But it's 1 million people. So how do you get to 1 billion? And I tweeted about this the other day where I said, look, I want to get 1 billion people in world as well. But the thing to realize is that that means, to have an experience like we're having here, that means we actually need about 50 million servers. 50 million servers. Now, if we're going to get that from here to there in, say, the next 5 years, the number of servers that people are going to have to be putting online to create these virtual worlds, places like this, mirroring the real world in some cases, is just an enormous number of servers. And so one simple practical reason is that even if we don't worry about Big Brother or something like that, we still have to figure out a way for all of us to work together very quickly to get all those servers up. And the way the internet works, which is the way high fidelity works, is that you just got one of these servers, you installed it yourself, or you put it in the cloud, or whatever, and you kind of got your own site up and running. And we believe that that is what we need to do as well. So high fidelity is designed to let everybody run the machines. And then, as you said, we're also doing work to make it easy to move machines around into the cloud, help each other out with processing and all these other things. But that is all to facilitate getting 50 million servers online, you know, in the next 5 to 10 years.
Oh my God, Philip, I just got the spectator cam working. Oh my God. Oh my God. You guys see this on the overhead projector? You see me?
We do.
Und hey, in München seht ihr mich? Hallo, Mama, ich bin im Fernsehen.
Seht ihr mich? Nee, oder?
Chaos, wir sehen dich nicht. Okay, awesome.
Dear people involved.
It finally works. But Philip, I mean, to quote a CEO friend of yours from the Wired article that came out last year, and I'm not going to use the word because it's PG show, who the F installs their own server in 2017? Basically, well, then, it's too hard to do that for the normal person.
We may in 2017 not run our servers necessarily on our machines at home or go install our own servers in a co-location facility, but we're certainly going to use servers from providers like Amazon or DigitalOcean, and those servers we need to be able to set up servers. So of course we're not necessarily going to be plugging those servers in ourselves, but most servers today are in the cloud. They're in Amazon, they're in DigitalOcean, they're in Rackspace, right? And if we're going to get an enormous number of virtual worlds up and running, one of the options we need to make simple is we've got to be able to put a server on one of those machines. And you can do that with high fidelity. You can't do it with anything else right now. And so I think we've got the right strategy there. There's not another virtual world platform that allows you to run your own machines like that. Mm-hmm. Right.
Oh, right, my gang. People are clapping.
Yes, we've got your avatar here, your scan. This is so cool.
Can you guys
see Chaos here in the audience? Mm-hmm. It's very cool. You're still, your physics isn't loading and you're all screwed up because you're
low bandwidth. Can I see myself on screen now?
I can see you.
Drex, can you see me?
I can see you. Is that your dupe scan? So this is for the physical room?
No, it's just I'm in now, actually, weird enough, with a back in my old scan,
may look like,
but
that
you
to
see
you?
Me as a dupe scan?
We see you so as the dupe scan. Yep.
Whoop. Let's talk about that.
She's gone.
No, I'm back.
What's
I'm
happening?
Persistent.
What's happening for everybody
so
to understand is... Yeah, go,
so
go
I want to tell you about, in whatever avatar you're seeing me now.
Which is nothing right now.
I love the dupe avatar, but I feel more comfortable in my comical avatar, which people might see my hands back on my screen. And This is because it's like social VR is a place where you really can you express your true inner self. And like, for example, I'm in real life, I'm like a really agitated person, and everybody tells me like, calm down, calm down. And with this more comical avatar, this gives me like the possibility to portray how I really like to be.
So, Kaos, we heard you, but we don't see you on my screen, which is fine. We see everybody else. What I would like to do, because I think we're running out of time.
Could we ask maybe, dear Inworld audience, I'm like stoked that you all have come, but it would be lovely if you maybe would have a party at Maker now. So, because maybe this would give me a possibility to load up Inworld, because my machine has big connectivity issues.
What's happening?
Sorry about that.
What's happening is from the show floor, we're getting your machine lagged so much that we're disconnecting you from the network, which, as you guys know, is something that High Fidelity kind of does automatically if there's more than a couple of seconds of lag. So yeah, a few people logged out here. We'll see. I don't want to kick everybody out, but yeah, maybe it'll improve things a little bit for you, Chaos.
I would actually propose that while Kaos is relogging for the remainder of the time, I would actually like to invite a few people on stage to talk about their experience with their avatar.
Come on up, Dr. Fran.
Who wants to come?
Yeah, but could Jasmine. We get like less audience in the in Saru, so that I have a chance to have to
I'll,
come
I'll
on
be
stage?
First to go, so I'm going.
That'd
to
be lovely.
Nice.
Okay, yeah. If a few of you want to log out, and we'll see if we can get Chaos in here. Yeah, the problem is the speed of her machine is causing her.
Okay, Chaos Princess has spoken.
I'm feeling better. I'm feeling more myself. Yeah, it's working.
It's Chaos has spoken, so people please leave.
I'm sorry, I know I asked
in the meantime, Philip, let me ask you a final question, and I was going to invite the audience. Let me look at the time. Actually, there's a clock back there.
Yeah, you can see us on the High Fidelity clock there.
Oh, awesome.
It's almost half past the hour.
27.
Half past, it's like, what is it, like 11:30?
11:27.
For us, it's 11:30 in San Francisco.
11:30 Pacific time. Mm-hmm. All right. I mean, that's about the time where we have to wrap. Let me ask you a final question, then maybe somebody from the audience wants to ask you something. You know, I'm very much of your opinion when it comes to authenticity in a virtual world and that immersion. Right now, and that's also been discussed sometimes in a heated way, AR versus VR. So augmented reality presents an overlay on the physical world. While we are now immersed, I have my Oculus on, I don't see the physical audience in Munich. What is your take on that battle, or is it a battle? What do you think? Why are you so convinced that it's, or are you, that virtual reality will win out the battle, or is it a battle?
It's actually not a battle, but let me talk to that a little bit. Like, if I had a meeting in a conference room, and we were planning this session, and I wanted you to join the meeting, we'd have a couple of different options. One is that we could all put on our headsets and meet together in here like we did today. But another option would be, what if I had an AR device that had sufficient internet speed that it would allow me to look across my real conference room while sitting next to a real person and see you, Drax, as your avatar in the chair across the table from me. Now, the technology required to do that is all the same stuff we're using here. We'd have to move your avatar, and we'd have to send information about you to me with very low delay. All that stuff would have to work like it does right now. So I see the difference as VR and AR in the long range just kind of being this question of whether you want to change all the pixels to something else, or you just want to put, say, a person, which I think will be the most common case, right in front of you. So I think that AR and VR kind of intersect in that way. Now, what is true about AR, though, is that it's actually a much harder technical problem. You have to let somebody look through the screen as well as projecting it into their eye, and you also have to know exactly where they are, say in a real room, to be able to make everything work magically like you see in the demos. And so AR is going to take longer to develop than VR. Oh, and then battery life. You have to have devices sitting on your head that are very lightweight and cool looking and have very small batteries. And so we have problems technically getting AR to the point where it needs to be. So I think we're going to do a lot of VR for conferences like this, where people are, you know, some subset of people are fully, you know, using these VR rigs that are becoming so much better and more usable every day. And, you know, Microsoft's about to come out with some fantastic VR headsets at the end of the year here. So I think that we're going to enjoy VR for quite a while. And then as AR technology becomes good, there will be this fusion where we do appear to each other as avatars in AR. And then we do lots of other cool things with AR, like, you know, put art in the real world, like Snapchat's just doing, and, you know, exploring other ideas that'll be cool there. But I don't think it's really a war. I think there's going to be a lot of use cases for VR, say time travel, you know, or learning about the moon. I mean, you're going to use VR for that in any case. So I think they'll work together, but it'll be slower to get to AR.
Fantastic. So we're wrapping. Let me ask someone in the physical, let me ask the Munich audience. I'm going to hand over the Oculus to a person from the room. And she will inhabit my body. It will be a body transfer. I don't know if, how ethical that is. So
questions raised.
Hi, Philip. Nice to meet you.
Hello, Lisa. Nice to meet you.
That's so crazy.
You can turn all the way around just like that.
Do you think it will be future in was heißt eine Firma? Business? In the business sector? Like in 5 years?
I do. I do think there's a lot of future for VR in business. One is in training. You can imagine that we could teach you almost anything in a room like this by showing you the machinery or simulating the experience. And then, like we talked about before, as the avatars get better and better and the facial expressions get better, we can use these spaces for meetings. And we can bring together, you know, people without having to fly on airplanes. And that's a really big technological change that this is going to enable.
Can you just repeat some arguments? Because actually, now at the moment, there are also Skype conferences.
But with a Skype conference, you can't pass something back and forth or work on something together. Also, the feeling of sitting in a circle with 10 people is very different in VR than it is, you know, with something like Skype. There's just all kinds of things that we can do here. I can paint in the air in front of you to make a point. I can load something like a car right next to us, and we can walk around and, you know, sit in it and look at it. And these are things that are pretty hard to do with video. And, you know, and as everybody knows, video doesn't feel quite right. You feel like you're looking through a window into another place, and you don't feel very connected to it. You also can't make eye contact. And in here, you can make eye contact. You can tell when someone is paying attention to you. You know, you can see them looking at you. So as the ability to animate the avatar and describe the avatar gets better and better, I think business people are going to start using this. Of course, the other challenge is that the equipment that you're wearing right now is not ready for widespread business use, but there is a tremendous amount of work going on to make these things smaller and lighter and work better.
And how much does this cost?
Well, the one that you're wearing right now costs $400 US. And there are a number of them coming out at the end of the year here from Microsoft that range, I think, anywhere from $300 US to $500 or $600, depending on what kind of capabilities they have. Part of the magic of VR is, just as you said, that it can give people that have different types of disabilities the ability to transcend them in the virtual world. we've been very thoughtful about this. I mean, certainly we have the ability to use our hands with these hand controllers, but we also have the ability to operate in here with the mouse and the keyboard. And Caitlin was even demonstrating there, she was finger painting just using the keyboard basically in front of herself. And so we believe that the environment should be open and extensible so that people that have disabilities can do as much as possible, like they can do in Second Life today. In addition to that, though, we have the additional optional capability now of using our hands normally. But as you say, it's a huge opportunity of virtual worlds to be as inclusive, more inclusive than the real world in many ways for people with disabilities. And I know that's going to continue in high fidelity in Sansa.
Thank you, everybody, if you can hear me. Cheers! Thanks for everything!
And that's it. That's the show for today as I'm driving home from the event. The event is over. I'm gonna link to the event itself. There was a bunch of other panels. They were all in German. Unfortunately, some really interesting panels on sexual harassment online, fake news. That's it. Also going to link to the Atlas hopping that we did, or the hangout at the Halloween Harvest. Harvest is still, 114 Harvest in Sansa is still totally decked out Halloween style. We're going to go back to Atlas hopping Saturdays, 11 a.m. What else? Maxwell Graf, you may have heard, is in kind of dire straits. There's some real stupid family drama going on, and he is getting evicted. He and his wife are getting evicted, and there's a fundraiser that collected, I think, $1 million, if I'm correct, $1 million linen dollars for him. You can still donate to him. We'll link to some information about his predicament, and you if you have some linen dollars to spare, even just buy some of the Rustica wonderful content, you can help out Max. Also, Jo has successfully crowdfunded her computer. She's going to get a gaming computer. Skylar Lucas, a wonderful role player in Second Life, is also doing a crowdfunding campaign to get a laptop that runs Second Life. His family lost everything in, I'm not sure if it was a hurricane, but it was last year. It was pretty bad. As I'm driving, I don't recall the full story. I'm going to link to it. But Skylar really would love it if you can throw him some dollars or linden dollars that he can convert. So I'm going to link to his crowdfunding campaign. That's it for the show. Have a great Sunday. We'll see you and hear you, or you hear us, hopefully with Joe, next week. Bye.
Radio Hour with Joe Yardley is a weekly production of Basic Drax Entertainment. The show is supported by Time Portal, SL Artist, Warbug, Bay City You Know for Kids, 01 Heavy Industries Corporation, Extraordinary, Ionic, Maven Homes, Giza Creations, Botanical, Strawberry Sing, Abranimations, Eros Avatars, Caravel Design, The Cube Republic, What Next, Landscapes Unlimited, Fallen Gods Incorporated, and Death Row Designs. Thumbnail by Justin Esparza. Contact the show via Skype, Draxfiles, Avatar Draxfiles, or email radio@draxfiles.com.